Well, I am so honored to have been chosen to present at this oral session. Thank you to the selection committee. Rachel, a great talk to the talk that I'm given. In fact, it belongs along with Rachel's because it's the concept of saying, can we exploit the tools that we've been given now and not be hampered by the manual labor and the tediousness when we can electronify so many of our work processes. So I put a new title on here for the presentation as I was putting this together, Using Reportable Disease to Track Antibiotic Resistance. The next big thing is the old thing. And I've actually been somewhat of a a doubting Thomas or a show me Missourian about some of the new attempts to apply informatics to public health, some of the things we're working on, and I really hope they play out. But I'm absolutely convinced and just remain enthralled by the development of the NEDS program, and especially with electronic lab reporting, what that does for public health. And so really this talk is kind of like Rachel's. It's like once we've been given this tool, how can we exploit it to really maximize the benefit and put more things on the highway that we built. I have a number of collaborators here. Chao Wang, who did a lot of the work the last year on this, thanks to funding from CDC and the HAI program, is back down in CDC, and she'd be presenting here if I wasn't here. Caitlin Padotti, Ann O'Keefe, Chad Wetzel, a number of people. In fact, there's another person here in the room who helped us in the early days of this, Lei Zhang, who's at Clark County Health Department down in Nevada. So all of those, I give them thanks and give them credit. Advance. Perfect. Again, this is the, a screenshot of just why are we intimidated by big data? And so, Rachel, I was thrilled to hear your talk, and I said, we're kindred spirits. What we're doing with this antibiotic surveillance, and it may not be possible in other places, although if we were Google as a public health entity, I think the whole country would be doing what I'm going to try to explain here today. So I'm going to walk through three sections. One is the regulatory evolution, and Rachel mentioned this herself, where in the states we can control this. And one of the things that I personally take a lot of delight in is the ability to have a statute and a regulation that allows us to get personal identifiers. And again, Rachel, I'm a little bit, nonplussed by your fanaticism of getting rid of data after 18 months to protect confidentiality. I don't know how confidential negative hepatitis C information is. I'm not criticizing, but we have felt like we can protect information just as well in the public health sector as we can in the hospital sector, and so we didn't let that stop us in terms of expanding our reportable disease regulations once we had the technical capabilities to do it with electronic lab reporting. So 2001, and then I'll talk about the technical issues involved in this, and then I'm going to try and show you some of the analyzable data that that has resulted from this surveillance system. There we go. So in 2001, we revised our reportable disease regs, and we at the time didn't have electronic lab reporting or NED system, so we had what we called tabular reporting, and we asked that laboratories around the state, it's essentially almost like a little bit of an antibiogram. We said on a monthly basis, would you please report your total number of Staph aureus isolates as a denominator and your MRSA isolates as a numerator. So too with strep pneumo, we had penicillin-resistant strep pneumo, and we had vancomycin-resistant enterococcus. In spring of 2003, the first NED systems came out. And we got our first electronic lab report. Did I see Carmen Pugh walk into the room, LabCorp? It was a euphoric moment when we actually saw this dream realized where data flowed automatically and populated our NED system. Well, what was really interesting, we had this regulation. And I almost kind of think Carmen Pugh's predecessor misinterpreted it. We just wanted tabular reporting at the end of the month for our laboratories where we got just the total number of isolates of these bugs and how many of them were resistant. And at a certain point, I discovered that LabCorp was actually sending us the whole antibiogram, I guess maybe as their own interpretation of the reg, or maybe a shortcut, less labor-intensive way to report to us. But anyhow, in January of 2004, we had our first antibiogram pop up, much to my surprise. And that really was what was the aha moment. And anybody who might be considering this, what I suggest you do is take an example of an HL7 antibiotic report and push it into your test system and see how it shows up in your application and whether you can extract the data in some kind of a data mart. Once we did that, though, as we revised our regs over the years, by 2010, I believe CDC had promulgated a MDRO module on NHSN, and I believe it included MRSA, VRE, Klebsiella, C. diff, and I think it was Acinetobacter, Enterobacter. So we added those, saying, well, you know, probably we weren't the deepest and broadest experts on where antibiotic resistance was going, but we felt like if those had been prioritized, let's put them in our regs and let's work on getting them through automated electronic lab reporting. So we added those bugs, and then we expanded that just this past year to get other bugs that we thought were of interest, particularly for carbapenemase resistance. So this was our 2001 regs, and we had what we call this tabular reporting. Lei Zhang is here, who wrote an online way for labs to report how many Staph aureus isolates did we produce this month and how many of those were methicillin resistant. So that was our early effort, and that was due to Sita Medalia, who's down at CDC now working in the NARMS program. Sita was a great, the first one to run our ELC grant and had a real interest and understood the importance of antibiotic resistance and so saw to it that this was placed into our regs. And this was the paper form that we used. You can see there's information up above about what the hospital was, the date, the month and the year, and that kind of thing. And then we basically had them report penicillin-resistant strep pneumo, penicillin-intermediate strep pneumo. Those were like numerators, and then the total number of strep pneumo isolates. So we could trend the percentage of strep pneumo that was evolving resistance. And this was, if you look at the date, January 14, 2004. I went back and looked for this talk, and that was the very first antibiotic susceptibility that we received. It was really like I couldn't believe my eyes when I thought we were able to get, you know, antibiotic susceptibility data flown in with really no effort whatsoever. Dan Myers at LabCorp had designed this.
These are actually SNOMED codes for susceptible and resistant. So this is a penicillin resistant, but essentially a broadly susceptible Staph aureus isolate.
So that this has been a 13-year process. This talk is, you know, we've gradually built on it. We have not had any real dedicated funding to do this. We've just tried to integrate it into our whole NEDS and laboratory interface automated electronic lab reporting system. So in 2010, we added, and the way we worded our regs in 2010, labs unable to submit individual antibiotic susceptibility data via automated electronic lab reporting must submit monthly tabular summaries. And we use that as an incentive form because most of the labs, once they have an opportunity to get away from manual work and monthly reports, they're delighted to move things into an electronic format. And here in 2017, then, our regs, and these just went into effect this past January, all laboratories reporting via automated ELR must submit all antimicrobial susceptibility results, including the MIC, if performed for bacterial, viral, and fungal isolates. We don't get any viral, we don't get any fungal. We get Mycobacterium tuberculosis susceptibilities. And essentially what we did here is we added several bugs that I'll mention to the list, and then we said regardless of what the bug is that you isolate, if you do susceptibilities for a reportable disease organism, those susceptibilities must be reported along with the bug. So we started getting susceptibilities for, as I said, M. tuberculosis, a salmonella, the enteric diseases, et cetera. And this slide set is available. I put our regs in there, too, if anybody can benefit from that language or get a hold of me if anybody wants to learn more about it. So here in 2017, now we have 35 bacteria on our reportable disease list, and we ask that our interface with laboratories capture and forward lab reports for those reportable bugs. Anytime these bugs have the antimicrobial susceptibility test, they need to be included. And this is just the list of the 35 bugs. Anybody in state health department, most of these are pretty common. But you will see that we have added things like Staph aureus, Klebsiella, some of these bugs, Enterobacter, Citrobacter, some that would not be considered, you might say, nationally notifiable and on most state reportable disease lists. And I've separated them. These are the classic, you might say classic reportable diseases that I think probably most states have. Your salmonella, enterics, tularemia, pertussis, meningococcal disease, et cetera. But these are the ones that we added, and I actually call it like syndromic surveillance, because very rarely do we actually go contact a patient or a hospital. In fact, most often we don't even look at it. It's kind of like a racial's work where these things flow to a system, and we segregate them from the mainstream of data so that our local health departments and our disease investigators don't have to do anything with these. These automatically move into the ODS, operational data store tables, into report database tables, and then we do further processing downstream, all unseen and untouched by public health investigators for the most part. And so the bugs that we put on here, again, Staph aureus had been on there since 2010, Acinetobacter, Aeromonas, Citrobacter, Enterobacter, you can see them. We're getting mycobacteria, and then, you know, there are a few gaps here, and I guess if I don't know what I was thinking, because the next time we revise the regs, we'll have to put, there's things like serratia. There's a few of these bugs that have resistance problems that didn't get added here, so. And I put some of the gaps here, Candida and coag-negative Staph, we don't get, so. Talk about the technical challenges. First of all, the HL7 system had nothing to do with myself, but I know I was mentioning this, I think, a year ago up in Anchorage, and Rita Altimore was just glowing, you know, when I was telling how wonderful HL7 was, and whoever did it was visionary and had all this foresight that these were perfectly accommodated by the HL7 implementation guides. And then again, I was pleasantly surprised, like in 2004, when I saw the LabCorp data flow into our application and out into our data mart. I first saw this in our data mart. I said, what is all these antibiotic susceptibilities, you know, commingled with all of our other reportable diseases? And one of the things, probably other states are like this, you're somewhat vulnerable. You never know what a lab is going to send you, or will they, you know, resend you things? We're somewhat, you know, we don't have any protection against that. And I was thrilled, though. This was one of those aha moments where I felt like I got a real gift. One of the biggest problems was extracting this data into analyzable data sets, pulling it out of the system in these complex relational data tables. Probably a lot of people in the room have dealt with that. You know, Aaron's staff in Tennessee, we couldn't have done it. I don't know who it was, but there was a wonderful programmer who mined the complex relational data tables underlying the NEDS-based system and extracted a brilliant data set with all the data we needed for this. Cleaning the data took some work. Chao Wang, who worked with me last year, a delightful collaboration with the newly minted MPH from Emory, came to Nebraska and worked for about a year and did a lot of work cleaning the data, so we have an extremely clean and analyzable data set. There were a few challenges. Sometimes you get like two isolates per culture. The NBS accommodates that. Vendors maybe need to be tweaked a little bit to make sure they knew how to get their data formatted on some things like this. And then I mentioned we get the MICs with interpretation. Some labs, believe it or not, they don't. There are issues that you always face in these interfaces where they say, well, every other interface we have, nobody cares about the MIC, and we interface with doctor's offices and things, and so we give them just the interpretation, and so we've had some variability, but for the most part, we've been able to get the actual numerical MIC along with the interpretation. Only for demonstration purposes. I thought maybe Rita Altimore might be here. But, you know, this is a standard, and a lot of people I know don't know this, but, you know, when you live in this world, you know it. And what it turns out, this is a Staph aureus culture, and you have the order is represented here, and the observation is a Staph aureus. And then you have a second OBR with all the susceptibilities. So I stuck it in there, and, you know, if anybody's at all interested, and even if you're not interested, you ought to at least just get an HL7 message for an antibiotic susceptibility and push it through your test system and see what happens. It's just kind of, you know, I guess we felt like it was an important enough public health problem that it was worth pursuing more deeply, and there may be other applications. So this is how it shows up in the application in our NEDS-based system. Like I said, human eyes rarely see any of these reports. You can always go back and look them up, and I went back and found this one from, this is a May 31st of this year, but this was an E. coli with the antibiotic, the MIC, and the interpretation. And then you have all the attendant information. Obviously, I didn't put the personal identifiers here, the ordering physician, the specimen source, et cetera. But it pops up. And again, the MBS, I don't think when it was designed, 22 states use it. I don't think anybody ever anticipated looking at antimicrobial susceptibilities, but they built it in such a way that it popped up just fine. This is scrolling further down on that very same screen, and you can see the other information. As we do with all of our reportable diseases, we have information about the ordering provider. We have the specimen source, specimen site. We have the lab accession number. We have data up here, which is in a PV1, patient visit 1 HL7 segment, which I'll talk about in a little more detail. But it shows this patient was in the emergency room, and they came in on the 28th, and they went home on the 30th. So this is the actual final end result. It's a swath that I put in here just to essentially, and any epidemiologist who sees this should salivate. We had to do some cleaning, and we retained the old data. It was all put into lowercase, and then we collapsed it. As you can see, for instance, Citrobacter, column K there, Citrobacter coseri. A lot of this stuff is just too granular, and so you need to lump these into, you know, groups of organisms. And so this is work Chao Wang did to write code to say if we get a Citrobacter, we categorize them all as Citrobacter SPP, Citrobacter species. But you end up with a clean data set then where, you know, it's ready to be analyzed. A couple of variables we create here, column L and column N, we actually quantify because we saw some variability on this, the number of antibiotics for which we have an MIC and the number of antibiotics for which we have an interpretation. So this E. coli at the top, it had 20 different antibiotics, and we had both the interpretation and the MIC for it. And I left in here the a screenshot of what we see then. So we have this, we have probably 81 or so antibiotics that we've gotten in, and this is just shows, and there's, you know, multiply this 81 times, the amikacin. You can see we get the MIC along with the interpretation here, column, these are all susceptible to amikacin. Suffice to say now, and I downloaded this, I don't know how many thousands of records we have, but I think calculation, I think if you add it all up, we're going to be getting about between 60 and 70,000 individual bacteria with their antibiogram annually. This is, again, a little bit of an example of data cleansing where you see how we had to, collapse Citrobacter amylonaticus. You know, this is the raw data the labs give us, and we don't ask them to clean it up. We just say, if it's a Citrobacter, please report it. When it gets to us, then we standardize it so we can do what you might call more rational analysis of susceptibility trends. You'll notice in here, for instance, I have coag-negative staph. It's not on the reportable disease list, but when we get polymicrobial isolates, there may be a Citrobacter and a staph aureus in the same culture. So we will get certain bugs that are not on our reportable disease list, and so we do have a handful of these. This is the SQL code that Tennessee shared with us that allowed us to extract all the data out of these relational data tables. It was a struggle, and it was a home run when we finally got it. I couldn't, and in fact, the SQL code ran so fast. Some of this code takes forever, but the guy who got the SQL code for me and ran it, he did it while I was on the phone, and within a couple of minutes, he said, you know, I've got you a data out of your table. So it was a real eureka moment. One of the things I emphasize, just like all of our reportable diseases, we get the supplemental data. We just don't get the bug itself and the susceptibilities, but we have a lot of information about the patient, the accession number, the ordering facility, information about the lab, ordering provider. We get the LOINC and the SNOMED codes and information about the specimen. I mentioned a really important thing that we actually embedded in our regs. We require a PV1 segment. Not every place is doing it perfectly, but there's certain data on the PV1 segment that represent really real value added, and we're able to pull it into our system and extract it into our ultimate analytic data mart that we use for this. But it has information about the patient location, the date of admission, the date of discharge, you know, the attending physician, et cetera. There's a lot of kind of value-added information, especially if you're looking at healthcare-associated infections and how long a person was in the facility before their specimen was collected. And I just mentioned this again, PV1 data that shows you that that data can come in just fine. I really think it was an understandable oversight, but I really think if at some point along the way, public health will go back to HL7 and require the PV1 segment to be part of a standardized HL7 record. This is an example of how we extract it, and you have, it was an inpatient. You can get the actual room number and the ward that the patient is on. You can get the admitting doctor. The patient was an inpatient. You can get admission and discharge date on the PV1 segment. And we did a little tweaking of our program because the NEDS base system didn't anticipate it, so we actually had to tweak it a little bit to get it to show up in the application like this. So I showed you a little bit of that data, Mart. Again, you can see, it's a clean spreadsheet. It's just rows and columns. Each isolate that we get is a record in the database with the MIC and associated interpretation. Just some numbers. For this year, we've gotten 25,346 individual isolates, 43 different organisms. Projected out for 12 months, that would be 60,830, 81 different antibiotics. I got to caution, obviously, when you're thinking, is this replicable? About 1.9 million people in Nebraska. So you can assume you're going to have to extrapolate that depending on how big your jurisdiction is. We have any variety of lab information systems. Sunquest does it great. Cerner does it great. Meditech and McKesson, pretty good. And then the big labs are sending us pretty good. So a couple of minutes left. This shows you, this is fascinating in a way, because can you imagine, when this gets running, and we're really, I would say we're probably, maybe about down to third base here on this. But you get a whole year's worth of data with all of your labs interfaced, and it gives you a lot more insight into how common urinary tract infections are or what kind of bugs are infecting the population. I'm just fascinated that of all the millions of bacteria that are out there, there's just this limited number that seem to have a tropism and affinity for, infecting humans. And it's fascinating just to see the distribution of these. Obviously, you're looking at urinary tract infections with a lot of E. coli. And it's kind of, to me, interesting that Staph aureus is such a common pathogen. So this is the distribution by laboratory. Different laboratories are sent us different amounts, 81 antibiotics. We're kind of, like I said, on third base. I'm going to mention one last thing as I have 1 minute left here, but we did some quick work to pull out some of the numbers, how much, what kind of MDROs are we seeing, how much carbapenem resistance are we seeing. The last thing I want to mention, though, is that this is kind of a unified approach to antibiotic resistance surveillance. You're getting the NARMS program. Everybody who's got a bug at CDC is worried about antibiotic resistance. Neisseria gonorrhea, Neisseria meningitis, MDR-TB, XDR-TB, strep pneumo, obviously the healthcare-associated things. This all comes in, out of the labs that are determining resistance, and it comes into one bucket where if you're interested in one of those aspects of resistance, it's there and available for you. So it's kind of a non-siloed approach to tracking antibiotic resistance. Last thing I'm going to say, there's a guy named John Stelling. I was introduced to him by Marion Kiner. He works out of Brigham and Women's Hospital. He works with WHO a lot, but John has been living in this world for probably his whole career, 20-plus years, and he has really devoted himself to developing a piece of software that can take your antibiotic susceptibility data and pull it into his application and spit it out as maps, tables, graphs, and charts and trends. And we're just now tapping into that and trying to work more with John, because you want this all to be totally automated, where all this data flows with no human intervention. And you'd like it to be pulled out of this data mart and not need an epidemiologist to look at it, but sucked into an application like John's application and generate, really probably, I would say, internet-enabled, internet-ready maps, tables, graphs, and charts for people to look and see what kind of trends are happening. Probably if we were Google, they'd be figuring out an app that doctors could use to look at this data and figure out what antibiotic to order. Probably my successor, the next generation, you know, you'll be getting this big data and having it readily available, because we get this overnight. Every day we get a fresh set of data, just like all of our interfaces with labs. So.